Okay, good afternoon everyone, I'm from Manchester, from the University of Manchester. I just thought I'd put in a few quick pictures of the city and the university for the benefit of especially American visitors. And we've had some good students and some good staff over the years. One of them was John Joseph Thompson, who was a student in Manchester, born in the city, and was a discoverer of the electron. Another member of staff was Will Rutherford, who split the atom. At the end of the road where I work, there's this little plaque to remember his time in Manchester. And also, I like to impose his favourite quotation. As a physicist, I'm not as sensitive to that point of view. Well, if you go to the university bookshop in Manchester, which is just a few yards away, you will find a display on atheism at the present time. And a whole array of books that have recently published, those by St. Richard Dawkins. And the question exists is, who is right? Is Ian Wilson right that we're celebrating God's funeral, or is Arthur McGrath right that this is the twilight of atheism? Maybe we'll know by tonight. Well, cosmological discussion involves a great variety of disciplines. And we can really classify them under two headings, arts and sciences. So there is the analysis of philosophical and religious texts, involves some of the issues that the previous presenters have considered, also things like philosophical theology. And then on the scientific side, there are such nice topics as relativity of curved space-time, quantum electrodynamics, and the philosophy of science. And many others. Including, of course, science and religion, which is now obviously a discipline in itself. Well, my overall aim in this talk is to advocate the legitimacy and importance of a twofold sense of the key term create and creation in the context of Trinitarian Christian theism. In other words, a distinction between absolute or primary creation, ex nihilo, and medium or secondary creation. And of course, therefore, this distinction hinges on the presence or absence of pre-existing matter. And so, for brevity, I'm going to call this the A&M distinction. Following aims, I have some particular objectives. Firstly, to review some aspects of current physical sciences. And secondly, to notice the neglect of creation in modern theology until recently. Thirdly, to present the case for this A&M distinction in Old and New Testament theology. To briefly consider a counterview articulated by Gerhard May. And to distinguish absolute ex nihilo creation from Big Bang cosmologies and any possible precursors, including all the quantum vacuum models. And lastly, it takes time for us to discuss aspects of media creation in relation to the divine attributes of natural law. So, when we think of cosmology, there are several axes that we can draw. We can draw the flow of time and history vertically with space as the x-axis. And on that, of course, in relativity theory, light cones are drawn and exist in that cartesian framework. Similarly, there is another important set of axes relating to temperature and time, and in the cosmos as a whole. And the general trend on the logarithmic scale is for a decreasing temperature, a cooling of the universe, associated with expansion. And as that cooling occurs, greater complexity becomes possible. Well, the outlines of the Big Bang cosmology are very important. Let me just hope everyone knows, let me just briefly summarize a few things. We can start with Einstein's general theory of relativity in period 1915 to 1919, when the prevailing consensus was of a static universe. Then in 1922, Friedman obtained solutions to Einstein's equations, indicating the model universe expansion from a singular initial state of zero radius and infinite density quantity of curvature. Edwin Hubble, a few years later, interpreted redshifts of galactic spectra in terms of an expanding universe. And then Lemaître proposed the Big Bang theory. And this, of course, contrasted with the other theories around that time of steady state, as articulated by Bondi and Coyle, particularly in this country. The Big Bang theory predicted the direct cosmic abundance of helium gas, which is around about 25%. And Prentice and Wilson observed cosmic background radiation, and that, of course, was very strong evidence in favor of the Big Bang cosmology. So, for many people, including Christians, this has raised the question of what happened before the Big Bang, and was this the act of creation? So if we have our axes of time flowing up vertically, an observer looking back through time is seeing some of the history of the cosmic origins and development. And cosmology, as this slide shows, is nowadays very deeply integrated with particle physics. It's not just a matter of astronomers looking through their telescopes, radio, or X-ray or otherwise, but also the integration of particle physics. Now, the embedding of physics in metaphysics is often expressed by various people, and I've chosen one quote here from the Nobel Prize winner George Smoot, who says the question of the beginning is as inescapable for cosmologists now as it is for theologians. And he says there is no doubt a parallel between the Big Bang as an event and the Christian concept of creation out of nothing. And so, for example, metaphysical issues start to become apparent when we extrapolate back the temporal time axis to the very beginning. And these are discussed, for example, in books like this, Physics Meets Philosophy and Planck Scale. So we can ask the question, does theology parallel science in this way, as Smoot suggests, or does theology take over? Well, there's a nice quotation that I'm sure many of you have heard, and you know what's coming, from Robert Jastrow in his book God and the Astronomers, published in the late 70s. He says, now we see how astronomical evidence leads to a biblical view, he says, of the origin of the world. The details differ, but the essential elements of the astronomical and biblical accounts of Genesis are the same. A chain of events leading to man commenced suddenly and sharply at a definite moment in time in a flash of light and energy. For a scientist who has lived by his faith and the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He is about to conquer the highest peak. And as he pulls himself up over the final rock, he's greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. Well, actually, despite these pressing metaphysical questions, I question whether they've really been sitting at the top of Jastrow's mountain top for much of the 20th century. Because there hasn't been actually a reflect of creation by theologians. Why was this unwinding difference to theological reflection? Well, in a book by Karen Strachline, God, the World, and the World in the Old Testament, he lists a number of reasons. I'll just put here, I won't read them all out for reasons of space. But they relate to other agendas in theology that have diverted and made concentration on the idea of studying creation not particularly attractive. So they include actual deist perspectives on the part of some people. In other cases, existentialist theology. In other cases, political liberation theology, and so on. And amongst perhaps near home to us, pietistic focuses on other forms of spiritual and otherworldly, so they can neglect of God's creation. But behind them all stands the figure of Friedrich Schleiermacher, whose doctrine of creation detemporalized the understanding and saying that it's more a case of the sustained relation of God to the world, not the origination of its existence. And I think that is true not at first, but wrong in what it denies. But generally, in science and religion, I'm thinking it broadly, more broadly than the CIS and the ASA, there is very strong downplaying of divine transcendence and the absolute origination of the world in favour of its rest on divine immanence. However, quite a lot of more recent theologians, of course, some in the 20th century and now the 21st, have actually started to attend more focally on the subject of creation and creation ex nihilo. And I list some of the names of people here, many of them, particularly the lucky ones, very much contemporary theologians. Well, in a case for this absolute immediate distinction, there's various kinds of evidence that can be briefly looked at, and I intend on this list to just briefly jump around very quickly and consider a few lines of thought. From the text of Genesis 1 on, and our previous speaker was uncomfortable then going beyond Genesis 11, I'm perhaps uncomfortable then going beyond Genesis 1 in this book. But in Genesis 1 verse 1, we have implicitly a distinction between the creator and the creation, an absolute transcendental boundary between the two. And the creation in turn is immediately differentiated into a domain of the heavens and the domain of the earth. And I basically digress in interacting with the previous speaker on the thesis of the advocated, but I won't. And I'll move on to the 19th century theologian, Charles Hart, who said this, and I think it's a good quote from his systematic theology on the point. While it has ever been the doctrine of the Church that God created the universe out of nothing by the word of his power, which creation was instantaneous and immediate, that is, without any dimension of any special causes, yet it is generally admitted that this is to be understood only of the original fall of matter into existence. But theologians, therefore, would distinguish between first and second, or immediate creation, the one was instantaneous, the other gradual. The one precludes the idea of any pre-existing substances and the cooperation of the other objects in the future. And if you carry on a little bit more, then I'll skip over that. If we go back to the 4th century, Basil of Caesarea said that if matter were uncreated, in other words, if it was creation ex materia instead of creation ex nihilo, if matter was uncreated, then it would from the very first be of a rank equal to that of God and would deserve the same veneration. And Augustine's had a very good public show this afternoon, so I won't take up too much time with Augustine, but of course I think we should all read his book on the literal meaning of Genesis, which, along with his Confessions on the City of God, discusses the convergence of thought about time and time as an aspect of the creation. So he argued for creation with time, and time is one product of God's creative activity. And Alistair Bradley summarizes this, the general principle, very nicely, typically a unmistakable British statement, that creation of Christian theology possesses resources which are relevant to new scientific debates. Now, Fred Armstrong, which I mentioned earlier, recognizes a broad Old Testament understanding of creation, including but not limited to absolute origination. And he details originating, continuing, and completing creation as a theme in the Old Testament. With the Hebrew verb bara, used of all three aspects. And indeed, several creation words used, especially in Isaiah, for also God's salvific work. And overall, the Old Testament presenting a relational creator and therefore a relational world. And there are many modes of creation in Genesis, you know, by spirit, by wisdom, by word, and so on. In the New Testament, some of the key verses that we've already mentioned today in this conference, such as passages from Hebrews and Colossians, link together creation and preservation of the universe. And particularly the Greek text of that last phrase there in Hebrews 3, sustaining all things by his powerful word, very big attempt. That verb, sustaining, is more properly bearing a lot, and it conveys the idea of the dynamic historicity of the universe that's thus created and moved along by the power of the Son of God to its intended consummation. And in Colossians, again, you have the linking of creation and sustaining. And there are a number of details we can pick up from Colossians, which I'll pass over rather briefly. Words like firstborn, which tie it rather well with the sense of meaning, or sense of before, with before meaning having preeminence and not necessarily being preoccupied with an idea of chronological presence. And there are some points that Alison Grant brings out as consequences of ex nihilo creation, which is that because it is ex nihilo, then there are no impediments to presenting the distinct character or inference of God being embedded in creation. In other words, in creation we see not the imprint of any other divinity or force, but the imprint of the triune God. And this imprint is found, therefore, as a transcendent divine rationality, or the Logos, which John introduces as gospel, and means of that apologetic to the ancient world in which he wrote. And therefore, also, Paul in Romans is saying that the invisible qualities of God are perceived in the things that have been made, which is stated along the same lines. Now, Gerhard May, a German theologian, wrote a book in the 70s discussing creation ex nihilo, brought a copy along with me, and he basically argued that this doctrine originated in the 17th century. And of course, time doesn't permit me to give an exhaustive critique. But it seems to me that there is a very strong old and intertestamental case for this doctrine. As the verses in the Apocrypha in 2 Maccabees that are very explicit about ex nihilo creation. And it's the only way, really, that Genesis can be reasonably understood, Genesis 1 can be reasonably understood, in view of its strong emphasis on the transcendence and otherness of God. And equally, the New Testament Christological texts, such as we briefly looked at, exclude creation ex nihilo, as in John chapter 1, verse 3. Of course, when heresy or opposition arose in the early church, as also today, then Christian discussion becomes more explicit. And that's why we find a ramping up of discussion of this topic in the 2nd century. But it's a doctrine, I believe, implicit earlier. Now, I'm conscious of the time, but we must distinguish absolute creation from Big Bang theories. It's consistent with Big Bang theory, and so it also is immediate creation. But the nothing of creatio ex nihilo is completely distinct from the nothing of quantum electrodynamics and the vacuum models proposed by modern theoretical physicists. There are other related issues, such as the A and B theories of time that arise in connection with quantum creation. So, summarizing some things, there is a good scientific case, I believe, for the standard Big Bang theory of cosmic origins. And like all scientific theories, this is provisional. And the Big Bang is a process. Pre-existing matter or energy was involved in some shape or form, possibly in the form of created so-called vacuum, which contained virtual particles and other energy and material constituents. But we must distinguish this from creation ex nihilo. So, besides the biblical doctrine of creation, which is often the answer to the question, how did the world begin? There is also the deeper question as why is there something rather than nothing? And so, if creation by God is bringing into existence of the entire universe of space and time from a standpoint outside of it, this can be understood as an eternal standpoint, so the universe is eternally present to God. So, the apologists do, Michelangelo, there is this creation. And of course, there are other issues as to whether God has time, a succession of events or moments in his Trinitarian personal consciousness, issues we definitely have time to explore. But overall, the message of Genesis 1, verse 1, would seem to be that God creates a whole temporally extended universe from outside physical space and time. And of course, our standard models of cosmic origins incorporate the beginning of physical time, which is valid, of course, for observers within the universe. But I think I'll stop at that point and try and answer any questions. Thank you. Created out of stars. Well, which then is, of course, equally to the dust of the ground. So I'm not sure whether I can really answer your question. You want to reformulate it?
Yeah, is there a first cause? How would you define a first cause?
A first cause? I think I'd hesitate to give a top of the head definition of a first cause, but other than the obvious meaning that If we understand the concept of cause, well, God is the first cause. I mean, this is obviously a classic definition of God as the ultimate, the one wholly necessary being.
I'm a biologist, but my understanding of cosmology is that there may have to be multiverses in order to get a universe which fulfills the anthropic principle, and it could have been 10 to the power of 100. That would fit, presuming, the God who was outside us. Mm-hmm. We're not just considering our universe, but other potential ones.
Well, I think I followed Alan Pantinger in saying that God is sort of in control of all possible universes. And certainly the universe that we do have, or we find ourselves in, is contingent. In other words, it could be different. But I think that's a very different issue of, with respect to biologists affirming that there must be multiverses. And I recommend you read Robbie Holder's book, Sandover Plan, who's written a book specifically on this topic of multiverses. A critique of this.
Other questions?
Comment on ex nihilo. I know it's part of the vocabulary that has been around for a long time. The idea of God creating out of nothing doesn't seem to make any kind of logical.
Right. Okay.
I would rather say God created into nothing.
Well, no. I think I understand what you're saying, and I think really we have to translate ex nihilo as meaning without the aid of pre-existing materials. That, I think, is the definition. And ex nihilo is a conventional phrase for doing that. Hebrews 11 verse 3 says that, by faith we believe the universe was made by God effectively without the aid of pre-existing materials. And that's what we mean by ex nihilo. Of course, it may have been made into nothing. Karl Barth, for example, has very convoluted discussions about nothing as if it is somehow an existing thing. But I think classically there's no real reason to affirm any existence to the nothing, if you see what I mean.
Other question? Yes, in
fact. Couldn't you simply say that it means a creation of matter and energy?
Yeah, well, certainly in ex nihilo creation matter, I would definitely yes include matter and energy, because matter is a form of energy, energy is a form of matter. So it's matter, radiation, and so on, so when God creates light, for example. If the ex nihilo creation was prior to the creation of light, as I would believe, then really that is just one transformation of one kind of energy into another.
Other questions? Over here.
I'll just quickly to ask what you would have said to Richard Dawkins, and I believe he said that as well, basically, if God made the universe, who made God? Dawkins says, seems very unlikely prospect.
Well, he will find out different about that.
Now I'm going to leave for one more question. Have another?
Quite a good option, isn't it?
Thank you very much.